Gracious Me.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to
Dumfries. Where are you, Dad? Where are you in your head today? Crazy fool.
I'm in my kitchen. My wife was contacted by a recruitment consultant called Chris Rea.
Get us a job, mate. This is the job from hell.
So that was on Monday, and all week I've just had "This ain't no technological breakdown" in my head all week. I can't figure out if it's good or not. I don't know. What did you think of Chris Rea, David?
It's definitely not good.
Oh, guilty pleasure, isn't it?
It is. Can't think of much worse. It's definitely in high ranks of guilty pleasures. Daz, it makes me, it's been another beautifully wonky week. You and I, we were very lucky to be invited on a Q&A with the fantastic bunch from Good Gym this week. And they're in the kind of classic Zoom fashion. You were in your camper van and the electrics weren't working. So you were basically in the pitch black. And you put some weird background on and you looked like the evil character out of Donnie Darko, which I thought was possibly the most scariest vision you could have given any lovely fresh bunch from the Good Gyms.
Aspiring ultra runners. Wasn't the Donnie Darko character a rabbit, a scary rabbit?
Mate, that's exactly what you look like. You look what, like scary the scary rabbit from Donnie Darko. Did you actually see yourself? Did you do the like reverse cam? It was frightening, mate.
I looked like the Emperor from Star Wars or something like that.
Oh yeah, they did say that, didn't they?
They did say that. Yeah, yeah. They were an interesting bunch. So it was really fascinating chatting to a whole load of people who were sort of contemplating embarking on long distance running, wasn't it? Sorts of things that people were interested in and worried about. And it was cool to be able to try to help, if not scaring them. Yeah. And our guest this week has got an amazing running CV and kind of running background. But we also, we had a guest presenter this week, didn't we? Our wonderful Kelsey Price, join us on the podcast. Kelsey's with us now. How are you doing, Kelsey?
Hello. I'm good, thank you. Sunshine in here. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Very jealous of your South Downs escapade today on a sunny day. Kelsey, you very kindly joined us in this week's podcast, and you had some interesting things to ask our guest based on your personal experience of injury recently. Do you want to maybe just talk us through your what happened with you over the winter after Robin Hood's?
Yeah, so in September, off the back of probably my best race yet, I was riding a high. I tried to run the following week and it just wasn't happening. I went to get my leg checked out and found out I actually had a stress fracture, which was my first injury ever. So it was all very weird and I didn't really know how to navigate it all, but it really got me thinking about what was going on. So I addressed something which I'd sort of brushed under the carpet for a while, which was oligomenorrhea. So I'd had really infrequent periods, but I sort of thought, oh, I'm fine. Like I didn't need to do anything about that. I'm a healthy weight. I eat a lot. So just sort of carried on as normal. But my background is actually in physiology. And I knew that having this meant that I probably had a bit of low estrogen. So I knew that estrogen is really important in bone health. So it sort of was the catalyst for me to look a bit more into it. So I spoke to a friend from work, actually, and she knew of somebody, which happened to be Yoasha, who's on the podcast today. And she put me in touch because she knew that she'd gone through a very similar thing with a recurrent history of stress fractures and something called REDS, which is relative energy deficiency in sport. So we had some conversations about this, and Yoasha was actually really, really helpful. Told me that often GPs don't test, so the routine tests that they do, they don't test for the right things. So she was really helpful in sort of helping me explore the whole thing and navigating it really and understanding what was going on with me and how to go forward with it to prevent things like that happening again. So yeah, that's how I got in contact with you, Asha.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I think it's such an important topic in the sports world that maybe doesn't get enough attention of what, you know, people tend to talk about the sort of the sunny side of things all the time, and the finish lines and the great feelings that we have from these things, and that's all true, but I think it's important for people to understand or as much as they can about what sorts of things that their body may be going through when they do exercise that can be quite challenging, to quite challenging levels. And there's some quite subtle things, I think, that can happen, especially when if people are exercising in, I don't want to use the word extreme too much, but let's say in quite an intense kind of way, and that can be combined with other factors, sometimes like maybe certain diets, certain calorie restricted diets, or trying to maybe be low carb or that kind of stuff. And you actually talks about that very eloquently. I think that's when people need to watch out and be a little bit careful, potentially. Fascinating to hear your story, Kelsey, and chat with you, Asha, about it all. We should put her on, shouldn't we?
Yeah, let's get her on, Dad.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Legends of Running Endurance with you, Asha Zakrzewski. Hi, you, Asha.
Hi there.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm probably better than you because it's just the start of the day for me where it's the end of the day for you.
Now, you, Asha, there's a couple of quite interesting elephants in the room. Kick these things off. So first of all, we're calling you, as you mentioned, different time zones. You are in Australia. And am I right in saying you went to Australia in the beginning when the lockdown pandemic hit? Is that correct?
Slightly before. It was just over a year ago now. I came over here for a 3-week holiday to run a race called the 6-foot Trek. The race was cancelled, not because of COVID, because of landslides after floods and bushfires. And then I got back to the city after not doing the race and my flight home was cancelled. And that was due to COVID, and I've been here ever since.
When did you take the decision to sort of stay more permanently?
I think the decision was taken away from me. There just weren't any flights. I was told by the Home Office after a month or two that there was a potential flight I could go on from Melbourne to London, which was great when I was actually in Sydney and I wanted to go back to Scotland anyway. And they said it went via Hong Kong and they couldn't guarantee that Hong Kong wouldn't stop us transiting and it would cost several £1,000s. So I thought, I think I'll just stay put.
Are you making home there now?
Yes, I had to then, after 6 months living off my credit card, I thought I really needed to start earning some money. So I had to then buy a different type of visa so I could work and get a job. And my visa is a 3-year visa, so I can stay that long now.
Wow, that's amazing. So the second elephant, and I sort of teased you a little bit in some of our previous emails, is that, Asha, you and I have actually raced together. I remember it very fondly, but can you remember when we raced together?
Well, you're Vicky Park, aren't you?
I'm indeed, yes.
I thought, that could be when I was stealing all everybody's Vicky Park kits for photo afterwards.
So this is back in 2017, and it was actually the world 100K champ over in Spain, where you had a fabulous second place. I was sort of cheekily part of the open event. I was really shocked at the time because, I mean, you were the only British competitor, weren't you? There were no men there at all. So, you know, people, like nowadays, people would be quite shocked by that. The number one thing, trying to get into Team GB squad, as with all kind of international teams. But do you remember that race, you, Asha?
I do. I have to confess, I was actually not second. I was third. But that was a controversial race, controversial result as well. The selection for that was, there was a little bit of unpleasantness around selection, people saying, why was I going on my own? But actually, I was the only person that had made the standard that was fit to run. So it wasn't that I was getting any special treatment. It's just there wasn't anybody else that was able to run and qualified.
You've actually sort of represented international standard. Is it 10 times now?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
One of the kind of things that we'd love to kind of get into in the podcast, Asha, is that I think, you know, you're quite a rare runner, a rare you know, in terms of the fact that, I mean, you really have covered many of the running disciplines as well as the distances, presenting Scotland in the Commonwealth Games in marathon, 200Ks, and more recently the 24-hour. Is there sort of something behind sort of your decision-making in kind of changing these things? Again, was it to do with sort of opportunity or things that, you know, you've always wanted to do?
No, I think part of it is basically a lack of confidence in my own running, because I was always told I was rubbish at sport as a child, last to be picked for a team, disqualified. So when I found running and started enjoying it and people would ask me to do things, I would always say yes, thinking, oh, they must have asked me by mistake, that I can't be good enough for that. And they may never ask me again. And once they realise, I'm never going to be asked again, so I'll do it now. So, for example, that's the same type of thing that here, that we've had events, whereas you haven't over there. So I guess it's actually, people think I'm crazy because I'm just getting a bit tired from racing every weekend. So I've done an ultra one weekend, short distance track race the next, a trail race the next. It's all a bit crazy, really.
One of our first podcast guests was Debbie Martin-Consani, and she told us about some of her first ever ultra races. And Darren and I noticed that back in 2010, one of your first ultras was the Devil of the Highlands. Now, what was it like kind of starting only your ultra career over 10 years ago?
Oh, you make me feel old. Debbie probably won't remember this, but we had a very interesting conversation in the toilets before we started, because I'd never run an ultra and I was, you know, in the toilets having a bit of a panic, as you do before the race. Yeah. And I spoke to her and another girl, and I didn't know them at the time, and I said, oh, I'm just a bit scared, what's it like? They said, oh, don't worry, it's all really nice and chatty at the back of the field, you'll love it. And then obviously I went on to do quite well in that race, and I was like, oh, I wonder if they remember saying that. But I just found, so, and that was an example of how I liked ultra running. So people like Debbie, who was obviously a high level runner at the time, would just chat to you and make you feel welcome. And then I found through the race, generally all the men that you tended to run with would just make you feel part of a, I don't know, part of a group, part of a crowd, and it was fun.
Just sort of looking back at the list of runners from that event, there really was a kind of a real strength and depth even then to Scottish ultra running. Did you feel sort of part of a community back then? Or because obviously the ultra world that we know you, Asher, is in its ascendancy, isn't it? It's kind of really exploding globally. Over 10 years ago, it was far less well known, wasn't it, in terms of the running world?
Yeah, and I was totally naive about it, really. I'd gone up with my club mates. We'd run the West Highland Way over a weekend, so 3 days, and then someone said, oh, you know, you can do part of it as a race. And I'm like, well, I could try that. And some friends supported me. But for example, at the start, I didn't know what was happening. So I was actually, there's a picture of me and everyone's running off and I'm facing the other way having a chat because I didn't realise what the start would be like. And we got partway along and I stopped and, you know, had a cup of tea and some tuna sandwiches with my crewmates. And they said, no, you need to get running. The next person's chasing you. I'm like, oh, actually, it's a race. It's not just a run with your mates. But that's how I feel running is. It's just running with my friends, really, in nice places.
Really sort of fascinated to know. Now, you know, you've spent a bit of time in Australia. You know, what's the scene like over there?
It's slightly different because it's all been a bit abnormal because of COVID and events being cancelled, being back on, being not on, having social distancing. But everything seems to be happening again. And I've settled in thanks to friends I've met through running quite accidentally. And they've really sort of accepted me into their community. And I've now done races over distances I thought I would never do. I never thought I would run a track race, like a short distance track race. And I ended up in Sydney in Olympic Park doing a 1500 metre race, which scared the daylights out of me. And I was thinking, they're going to lap me before I've even started. And then I found myself in Canberra on a track where there was a rugby match on next door and I was doing a 24-hour race. And then a few weeks ago, I did the trail run all the way through Tasmania. And then last weekend was up in the mountains here doing a trail race. Everything's different, really.
I love the range of running that you do. Do you have a preference?
I guess the short distance I hate because I'm just not fast at it and I'm just embarrassed and people can, and I don't like tracks because people can see you. There's nowhere to hide. My ideal race, you'd start in the middle of nowhere and no one would see you. And several K in might be when you would run through an area where there are people because I'm just I'm known as a slow starter, but I just like going to different places and looking around and seeing new scenery and exploring the world, really.
What advice would you give to somebody who's planning on running around a track for 24 hours, who's never done it before, and who can count on one hand the number of times that they've actually ran on a track? This person is me.
Well, you're probably a bit like me. So when I went and did the one in Canberra, when I got to 10,000 metres, I was like, whoa, this is a track PB for me. I've never run this far in my life. I'd never run on that colour track. So it was just really a case of sticking to your plan and ignoring everybody else. So I thought, yeah, some of the guys just ran off really fast. They were lapping me. But then later on, you just keep going and you'd pass them. And my forte is eating. So it's not that I get better during a race. It's that everybody else fades more than me. So have your food, have different food, have savory, have sweet, have salty, and just have it there to grab it and kind of eat before you're hungry, because you're not going to want to eat later on. And my main advice would be is don't stop and eat a pot noodle partway into it. I got to the 200K mark and it had been raining for about 8 hours by then. We were sort of splashing through floods and I hadn't stopped. And I was like, right, I've gone through 200K. I really want a pot noodle and to walk. And I walked a lap of this track eating the pot noodle and I just couldn't run again. Everything seized up. And for the next 6 hours, it was a shuffle fest. I was like, oh, why did I stop?
Yeah, I think I listened to you say elsewhere that a lot of people have the run walk strategy, but for you, it's just you didn't want to walk at all, because you knew that once you started walking, you feared that you'd sort of revert back to that again and again. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly my thing. So I know that even some of people who've won Comrades have walked bits of it, but I've never walked a step of it, because I think in my head, if I walk, then I'm just going to walk again. There's nothing to stop me walking. Whereas one thing that keeps me going is thinking, well, I haven't walked yet.
Yeah.
But I think if someone walks past me faster than I'm running, then I probably should be walking.
Was it always your intention to do 24-hour Yuasha?
No, never. It was just, that was kind of the only thing that was happening. Someone suggested it and I thought, well, I wonder what it's like. But when I started, I didn't expect to do well. So I didn't kind of tell anyone I was doing it. I told about two people. I didn't tell the organisers where I was from or what any records were, because I didn't think I would get them. I thought I might get to an hour and drop out. And I know that the problem with the 24-hour race is you can't drop out. You just get a really short distance recorded for you. So it was kind of nice for me that I was doing it in Australia where no one knew me, because I always feared if I ever did any race in the UK that I'd never done before, people might be looking at you saying, why are you doing so badly? Why have you stopped? Well, surely you should be better than that. And I just thought, here, I can just do what I want and stop when I want.
Some of the best 24-hour runners that we have here in the UK, they're sort of recording great distances, 220K mark. And in this run that you did, 236K, and might not sound like a huge difference, but believe me, it's quite an astonishing gap and would be pretty tough for most runners to kind of run that additional sort of 15K. I mean, I think it's the fifth best performance by any British runner ever in any 24-hour event. Pretty happy with that?
Oh, over the moon. I kind of, in a way, I know, you know, it's terrible to say this, but hindsight's a great thing. I wish I'd known what some of the records were before I did it.
Yeah.
Because if I'd known more than two laps in advance that I wasn't far off a British record, I might have actually pushed a bit for four laps rather than suddenly thinking I've got two laps to go. And then those last few hours were just horrendous. And I wish I could have run them and then think, well, maybe I would have run a bit further. But then again, I think now that I've run well, I never have to do it again. And at the end, I remember I had something like two laps to go and somebody said, you really need to push and get onto the next lap. And I was like, why? And they said, well, if you do, you're going to be second on the all-time British track list, but you've got to get onto that last lap. So I was like, I've been staggering for hours and suddenly I've really got to start running and do two hard laps at the end. Oh,
yeah.
My word, it was terrible. And I just couldn't get warm again afterwards.
Darren and I had the real pleasure of recording a podcast with Ellen Adams Robinson. She holds the SRAT record, doesn't she, Yuasha, of 240K. And one of the things that really stood out to me in our conversation was she used to run three times a day She was quite shocked by kind of the lack of miles, which a lot of kind of runners were doing today. Do you sort of have some sort of kind of feelings about running three times a day or big mileage in training, you know, to kind of improve upon your 24-hour time?
Well, that's kind of a political question because Ellen is a good friend of mine.
Ah, good.
The last race I did before leaving Europe to come to Australia was with Eleanor.
Oh, amazing.
So, yeah, we've been friends for years. She's managed GB teams when I first started running. When she had her hip replacement, I went down to visit her. So I know that she's a very high mileage lady and she would like to race most weekends, whereas I have a kind of different view of running to that. I'm not about lots of mileage because I think you get tired and you break more easily.
We'd obviously love to see you do more 24 hours. Can we expect to see you on another track soon for a 24 hour?
Well, if things don't all get cancelled. the problem is I guess my time from my time, not time, sorry, distance from last year will stand as a qualification level. But it was obviously nearly a year ago, world champs were cancelled. So we don't know whether they're going to go ahead this year. Would I need to re-qualify if I wanted to do it? Would I have to prove fitness? Not sure that I'd want to do it again. Like, I've never done 100K apart from at a world champs because you could use one to qualify for the next one. And I just thought, you don't want to do too many of these runs because you'd get sick of them. So it'd be nice not to have to do another one apart from at a certain level.
Yeah.
The problem is because it was my first, I didn't know what to expect. So everything was new. There was a small number of people there. And we had radio coming out of the speakers on the track. So embarrassingly enough, I was singing along to Taylor Swift songs at 3 a.m. as they were blaring out of the speakers. And I think I had news updates every hour. So I knew more about COVID than ever before because you were getting these bulletins. And there was just something to listen to occupy your mind the whole time. So I did think, I wonder if the next 24, if I did another 24 hours, if it was on roads just to be different to the track. But then I thought, well, you wouldn't have the same things to keep you going that you did there, which sound crazy because you think it must be really boring running in circles.
Yeah.
But because you had songs and music, time passed without you realizing.
Have you been contacted by Team GB after the 24-hour performance specifically about the next sort of set of worlds?
Yes, John was in touch, who's the 24-hour team manager, and asked me if I would be interested in being considered, depending on when they were and what the selection stand was going to be and that kind of thing. But obviously then things didn't happen. Now they're putting together forward a selection policy for October this year, but who knows whether people will be allowed to travel, whether the event will go ahead and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is, because I've been managing the team at the last 50Ks as well, the 50Ks is the same month. So I don't know whether we'll have a team for that or whether I'll be involved in the management side as well.
Amazing.
Can you tell us a bit more about the management of the 50K? Sounds amazing.
Well, this year it's officially due to be in Taiwan, I think. So I'm actually closer than some of the other people. last time we did it, it was over in Romania. And that's when the Brits did amazingly. Ali broke the record.
Yes.
And we also had, we had a British 1-2 and then a British third place in the men's as well. So that was quite a good time to be involved in it, really.
Is that sort of an easy thing to do whilst you're out in Australia? You know, that whole kind of keeping in touch with kind of athletes back here in the UK and kind of being part of that scene?
Well, I haven't been so much involved in it, just partly because nothing's really been happening from that point of view. I've been keeping in, still doing sort of some of my coaching stuff online, workshops and Zoom things, but I've kind of taken a little step back and we'll see what happens. So I kept in touch with everybody about it.
And now a word from our exciting chocolate sponsor, 18 Noir Ultra.
Looking to find a new nutritional snack to have as part of your training regime? 18 Noir Ultra training bars do just that. We have 3 available varieties, each designed to assist in every stage of training and racing, from pre-race apple pie bars to balance and motivate your mind and body, to our endurance booster bars to maintain consistent energy levels throughout, and our post-run Funky Monkey bars to revitalise and start the muscle recovery process. Using premium quality chocolate, which is vegan friendly, gluten free, and has organic natural toppings, it lets you work harder for longer and feel fabulous. A daily dose of greatness. To find out more, visit www.18noirultra.com, and if you use the code Camino at checkout, you'll get an extra 20% off all orders.
You're actually myself and Kelsey, we've both had our injury woes over the past few months. And Kelsey, I know you were in touch, weren't you, with Yuasha?
Yeah, so Yuasha, you and I have spoken, and I've obviously also read your blog post about your experience with Red S. So for anyone listening, Red S stands for Relative Energy Deficiency in Sport, which I'm sure you're at a better place than me to go into. But I was just wondering when the alarm bell started and how you sort of navigated that whole experience, because I know that it meant that you had quite a lot of time out with injury, is that right?
Yes, mine was a slightly an unusual path into it, because I thought I had an injury. I wondered if I had a stress fracture. I had an ultrasound and someone said, oh, there's no reaction on the bone, it's fine. And it wasn't behaving like a normal stress fracture. It was swell when I ran, it would be pain a bit on downhill, but I could walk fine, I was still racing, but it just didn't feel right. And after things didn't settle for 6 months, I've been pleading, could I get an x-ray. Eventually my GP referred me for an x-ray and an ultrasound, had the x-ray, then I went to run across Oman in a multi-day race, and when I got back to the airport, turned my phone on, I had 3 messages saying, I hope you're not running, you've actually got a fracture across your tibia.
Wow.
So that was how I'd had it 6 months, and I'd still been running on it. So I stopped and it wouldn't heal. And I thought, there's some reason why this isn't healing. I'd been amenorrheic for a while. I couldn't work out what was going on. Basically spoke to some consultants who were specialists in that area, because locally, most people didn't realize at the time, people thought, you're amenorrheic, you're training hard, that's fine. I distinctly remember a consultant saying to me, well, you don't look like you don't eat. And I thought, that's quite an insult compared to other runners, because I'm twice the size of a lot of runners. But that just shows that you can't have one body size fits all, and you can't presume, looking at somebody, that they're not a scrawny track runner, that they aren't getting enough energy for their needs. So I did certain blood tests and got a bone density scan, and that basically brought everything to light then.
Yeah, I've done a lot of reading on this myself as well, and a lot of people dismiss sort of the absence of periods, because as a runner it's probably quite convenient, and people don't realize the actual risks it might pose in terms of stress fractures. And it's unfortunate that it takes something like that to actually make people look into the root cause. How did you cope with time off with injury?
Well, that's basically when I did the athlete to coach conversion course with British Athletics. Cut down, because I'd been running on the fracture and it hadn't worsened, I thought, well, I'll just cut down to just hardly any running, a little bit, and doing other exercise. And after 6 months, it wasn't healing at all, because you couldn't go on normal symptoms. You had to just re-x-ray it. And I had an MRI. So then I went to a specialist and he basically said, you need to stop doing any exercise at all. You need to make yourself as heavy as possible. You need to get your hormones all sorted, these other tests. And I found it really hard, because I don't run because of the competition or for anything like that. I just find it a switch off from work, and I run because I like running. So that was really quite weird. I was like, well, I'm not even meant to be walking far. I can't get on my bike. I can't go for a swim. I'm literally driving to work and driving home again and sitting on the sofa. So it was a bit weird. So I was kind of living my outdoor life through everybody else.
How long did that last, with not being able to do what you love?
So I was a bit naughty, because he told me on about the Tuesday that I had to stop all exercise. I thought about this on the Wednesday, emailed some of my friends and said, I want to do a Bob Graham round. Can I do it this weekend? And then I'm going to stop running. And they all replied back on Friday and said, we'll support you. I did my Bob Graham round and then I stopped. And then I basically didn't do anything for about 2 to 3 months at all. I didn't even walk much more than a mile. And then they did another scan, and they said, well, it hasn't changed at all. And I was like, well, that was useful, wasn't it, for the bone? And they said, but it hasn't got worse and you're not having any pain. Why don't you start introducing a little bit more? So I just started doing a little bit of, you know, pootling around on a bike, some gentle jogging, and then just gradually thought, well, it's not worsening. I'll just keep doing a bit more, and if it hurts, I'll stop.
In terms of getting back into it, have you had to make many changes to, I don't know, nutrition or training or lifestyle to sort of keep on top of it?
Well, I did do a lot of sort of research into it and looking into it, because there were all these different fads that runners adopt. And because I was a distance runner, people were telling me, oh, you should be doing fasted runs so you're fat adapted and things. And that's actually really quite bad for reds, bad for hormones, bad especially for females. But actually even men shouldn't be doing it more than a certain distance, a certain number of times a week as well. And I started just changing things. Like, I've never liked milk. I thought Margaret Thatcher was brilliant when she was the milk snatcher. I couldn't stand drinking the stuff. But I've started, like, when I make my porridge, I'll add milk to my oats. When I make scrambled eggs, I'll add milk to it. So it's kind of adding in the calcium. I thought, I'll go to Australia, sit on a beach, get vitamin D, eat ice cream. That's calcium. That would help. Adding protein in. So just sort of putting extra stuff in all my meals and making sure that I got enough, and ignoring everybody who said, oh, you'll run faster when you lose that weight you've gained. And I'm like, well, what, this weight I've just tried really hard to gain because I need to for my health. So it's kind of, it's really hard because even runners don't understand it. A lot of medics don't understand it because they would say to me, have you thought about doing more weight-bearing exercise? I was like, that doesn't help. And I did have a recurrence of it this year since I came to Australia. So that was something that was quite hard to deal with it, because I was staying with a friend who was low carb and I like my carbs. So because he wouldn't have carbs in the house, I was finding I was starving, basically. So yes, there was a slight lockdown, but I would go out the house and go to a cafe and go, I need to take away crust, so I need to sit on a wall and eat it because I am starving here. And I think then I went and got another bone scan and my bones had got worse. So I was like, look, I really need to get away from this situation, go back to eating what I want to eat, which is more and more of it. So it's hard mentally because you've got to ignore everybody else and put yourself first and do what doesn't feel normal as a runner.
Absolutely. And it's that constant checking in with yourself, isn't it? Because before you know it, time could go by and you've got another fracture and you're back to square one. So what would you advise for someone to check in? How would you advise someone in checking in with themselves? Because I know it takes quite often a few years, doesn't it, for people to get diagnosed with something like this. People might not be aware of the sort of signs and symptoms.
People are kind of aware of it, but don't want to be aware of it. So it's head in the sand. There's quite a lot of men that have it and don't realise because they don't have some of the early warning signs. So for men, it can be libido changes, the technical term, lack of your morning glory, that kind of thing. And I've seen men who are ultra runners who were in their 50s and in spinal braces and had replacements and fractures because they've had osteopenia, osteoporosis without realizing. And it's kind of too late when it's diagnosed. So for everybody, you think, well, you've got to think about what your long-term goal is. Do you want to run faster in the next couple of months, or do you want to be running in several years' time? So for me, it's a, maybe I'm not doing what I want to do now, or I'm not the level I was before, but I'm going to be running when I'm Eleanor's age and enjoying it and still getting out there. And, you know, I'm not a world beater, but I do it because I like it. So I want to keep doing it. But it's really hard to check in and say, why am I doing this? Why am I running?
And quite often, if you need to take a bit of time out, I found, so I had 3 months off with a stress fracture from September off the back of a 100-mile race, and it's quite refreshing actually to realign your whole perspective on running and have that time out and sort of take a think about why you do it.
Yeah, and also sometimes have a look at other people. Well, that sounds a bit stalkerish, but I don't quite mean it like that. But what I've noticed since having this and since taking a step back is how widespread eating disorders are. Especially in runners and cyclists, less so in swimmers because you need a bit of body fat for buoyancy. But cyclists can be bad. And you hear about the Tour de France cyclists that take sleeping tablets because they're going to bed hungry and they just want to sleep to get rid of the hunger. And because they're not doing any walking, they might get off a bike, twist and fracture a hip. I now see it in runners, and people talk about earning their coffee and cake afterwards. And it's like, well, you're not earning it. Have it because you enjoy it, and then run because you want to run. Don't it, one isn't because of the other. Or you'll see people at the end of a run and they just want to drink a Coke Zero or something with no sugar. And you think, actually, you need that energy. If you're going to drink a fizzy drink, drink something that's going to give you some benefit to your body, even obviously probably shouldn't be drinking that much of that anyway. But it's really quite hard seeing it in other people. But you know that you can't help someone or give someone advice if they're not at the right time to receive it, if they don't want to hear it.
How are you getting on with your injury, David?
I'm struggling. I need some of your soothing advice, Kelsey. Yeah, I mean, it's only been 4 weeks, but it feels like 4 months. It's tough, isn't it? It's tough to have what Yoasha was wisely sharing, is the recognition and the patience that you need to afford yourself, because you know that the chances of re-injury are very high if you kind of jump back into it. I tell you what's interesting, Yoasha, is that you mentioned about the Bob Graham round. And that's something that Darren and I, we've got that scheduled for the first weekend in June. And so to Kelsey's point, I'm kind of mentally thinking, you know, will I be able to sort of get back to the kind of level of fitness that I need to do the Bob Graham justice? Because it's definitely not the type of challenge you want to undertake, especially with Daz. If, you know, at the beginning, you know, you're going to be been struggling. I mean, how was the attempt for you?
Well, my aim was to do it in 23:59. I just wanted to get around. I thought, I'm 42. I've now got to take, I don't know how many months off running. I've got to do it. I want to do it while I'm 42, because that was when it was meant to be done. It was that you peak for every 8 years.
Yeah.
And I had such an amazing crack team. They were just brilliant. It was like a day out in the hills with my friends. So Jasmine Paris did leg one with me, handed me on then to her husband for leg two, Conrad, and it was carried on. I was passed around all my friends. So I had one supporter on each leg, and it was just brilliant. It was just a good day out and a chat. And I made sure I ate properly. I made wraps of, you know, with hummus and beetroot in them, because I know I like proper food. I don't want fake food. And then I had coffee and yeah, obviously I'm a chocoholic, so I had chocolate and cake and banana bread and cookies and everything else. And on one leg, I was actually feeding one of my support crew because he was bonking and I had so much. I was like, you're carrying the food for me, just eat it, you're knackered. And the best bit was just getting to the end, and I got to the road bit and I was like, oh, I'm just so tired, I can't be bothered to change my shoes. And the guys had met me in the car and they just pushed me in the car and took my fell shoes off and said, right, they're off now, you've got to put your road shoes on. And I was like, right, if I didn't walk in Comrades, I'm not walking on up this road. And I absolutely went for it in the last bit. And I got to the moot hall basically before my friend had driven around to get there, because he wasn't expecting me that fast, and ended up doing it in under 22 hours. But it wow. was just brilliant.
Wow, that sounds like pure heaven, especially the feeding bit and all the chocolate cake. I'm in.
And then the real food.
About the 24 race on the track, I mean, that's the best bit, is you go past your feeding station every 400 meters. And I made a whole load of loaf of banana bread, I made chocolate chip cookies, and that's basically what got me around, because I was like, I can take food every lap, this is amazing.
Oh, that's brilliant. I just had one quick thing I wanted to ask you about, which was so we haven't actually met, but you have overtaken me actually in a race, and I don't think I've ever been overtaken by someone moving quite as fast as you were moving that day. And I don't know if you recall the race, but you won it outright, and I think you were something like 20 or 25 minutes ahead of second place. It was a race called Race to the King. It was on the South Downs, but I think
I remember that was a bit of an interesting race.
Yeah, you'd actually started, I think something had happened with logistics wise, and you'd started a bit after the mass start, but you basically caught everybody and still finished ahead. Did you have the same start time as everybody else and you still caught them, or did they give you some start time leeway?
No, what happened was, because they bust you from the finish.
Yes.
So I had to, that was the same year as the Spain 100K, because the Spain 100K was 4 weeks after the World Trail Champs. So I had to do two long races to prove I could do two, one after the other. So I'd done one just before, and this was my second one. My sister lives in Winchester. So I was like, brilliant, I can go and I'll run to my sister's house. So they bust you to the start, but our bus got caught in roadworks and we got to the start. So it was an official bus 90 minutes after everybody had already started.
Okay.
So for those, the other guys who don't know, you can run it or you can walk it, and you can do it in 1 day or 2 days, or you can just do part of it. So we were starting an hour and a half behind everybody, and we then got to get past all of the walkers who are out for like a day walk. So you're weaving around people, you're going through aid stations, and if you want, you can stop at an aid station and do yoga. So you've got to pass all of this. And then we're going through, and I remember getting to one of the last aid stations going, how's it? Has everybody finished? What's going on? And they said, actually, you're catching the people they haven't finished yet. And I thought, oh, this is a bit odd. This is the last aid station. And then the heavens opened and it was thunderstorms. I don't know if you got stuck in that. And it was flooded and you had knee-deep water. And I remember sitting down in one of these little portaloos going, it's raining, there's no point, we're so far behind the rest of the field. But we carried on, and yeah, and the end was quite horrible because it was still pouring with rain and you finished on the steps, and if you didn't stop in time you skidded and fell down the steps. So there's this picture that's meant to be an iconic picture of my sister hugging me at the end, and she was actually just catching me so I didn't skid all the way into the cathedral.
That's brilliant.
Catch the whole field up there, because the lady that crossed the finish line first was a bit upset because she said she was the first female finisher, but my time was nearly an hour 20 minutes quicker than hers.
Yeah exactly. In the published results, you've got the win there. I think it's in 7:57. But just to embarrass myself a little bit more, I was actually doing that race over the two legs. So I was staying at the overnight camp on the Saturday night, and then doing the second leg with my wife as her first kind of marathon on the Sunday. So you, despite starting 90 minutes behind me, you caught me after about 20 miles, and yeah, like I said, the speed you were moving was I was shocked. I really was shocked. I just couldn't believe it. You must have been running, I don't know what sort of pace. You must have been running like six minute miles or 6:15s or something like that. Yeah, it was astonishing. So anyway, that's the only time I've seen you out on the race, and it was an honour. Yeah, really special.
I had to, really, because I told my sister that I'd get back at a certain time, and I didn't have my phone on me, so I couldn't tell her that we were starting an hour and a half late. So I'm like,
brilliant.
Kids are going to be like hanging around waiting for me.
I love it.
That's wonderful. When we were contacting you, myself and Kelsey, none of us actually knew anything about the IAU's 6-hour virtual event. And then we saw some posts on Facebook from our friends Sam Amend and Dave Andrews, and we noticed your name on the list. Is that happening? Are you part of the team for the event this weekend?
Yes, I am. I did say I'm not going to be doing any heroics because it's my fifth weekend of racing on the bounce. But I thought it fits with the theme of it. So it's global solidarity because so many races have been cancelled. And I thought, what better shows global solidarity than me running, representing Team GB, running in Australia, and I'm going to wear a Team USA vest. So I thought that's three countries covered. I've set up a route with the help of some friends here, which is, I'm calling it a ring of friendship, because I'm going to do a circular route round the lake and another lake, starting and finishing at a tree, which we call the Trotters Tree, because the local running club, the Trotters, start all their runs at the tree. So I'm starting and finishing it at their tree, doing a big 6-hour loop, and some of the girls are going to come with me on their bikes. But the problem is we're forecast for 100 mils of rain tomorrow and a damaging wind, so that could be fun.
Wow, that's absolutely fabulous. Well, we wish you all the very best for that, and obviously all the other fabulous runners in the event. It's always amazing to kind of follow those, isn't it? People's kind of individual solo challenges. People come up with all kinds of wonderful and kind of creative ideas to cover the events. Yeah, all the very best for that, Rasha. And thank you very much for being part of the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, really. It's nice to talk to you all.
Goodness gracious me.
Doctor, I'm in trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble. Oh, doctor, I'm in trouble.
Well, goodness gracious me.